4, Side 2, House Committee on the Judiciary, Subcommittee 2, January 31st, 1979, 1:30 p.m., Room 350. Bill HB 2006, relating to disclosure of faculty and student records. HB 2010, permits Superintendent of Public Instruction to obtain court order requiring local school boards to adopt rules governing access to student records. House Bill 2011, relating to access to public records. House Bill 2137, regarding confidentiality of public records.
Will come to order. The clerk will note those members present. Representatives Cohen, Bugis, and Mason are excused. First bill on the agenda for public hearing today is House Bill 2006. Is there anyone here to testify on House Bill 2006? Jones, do you have anything that you'd like to say to the committee about House Bill 2006, since that was mentioned?
Yes. As I understand it, the reason for the bill is that ORS 251.065, as it currently reads, applies to both faculty and student records, and that the federal law has different requirements for student records than it has for faculty records. So, it takes student records out of that section, puts them on page 4 of the bill into ORS 351.070, and makes the requirement for student records consistent with Department of ACW regulations concerning student records.
I know that in page 3 in subsection 5 of the bill that there's a change from ORS 192.030 to 192.420. Is that a substantive change?
No, I believe that most of 192 was renumbered several sessions ago, and we have another bill coming up that does the same thing. I think it's just catching up as we go along.
Are there any questions from any members of the committee? If not, we'll move from House Bill 2006 to House Bill 2010. Wes Martin.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Wes Martin. I represent the Oregon Department of Education. I'm here to state that the Department of Education supports this bill and recommends its passage.
Why do you support it?
It will give us a tool to one of the use words encourage but enforce it really more accurate. The compliance of this particular statute, which are realistic. Currently our only tool is to withhold all of the money for basic support for our district, which won't comply with it. And that is cumbersome and there's a great tendency to not use it if the district chooses not to comply.
Well, you're saying that the threat of withholding the money still in many cases the district will not comply, even if you threaten to withhold the money?
I'm saying that there's a tendency not to want to threat and to withhold the money if this is the only thing that they're out of compliance with, because withholding the money really punishes all of the students, all of the community, everyone involved, whereas this tool would give us a chance to say you really have to do it and the penalty is upon you.
Well,
So,
what's the problem?
What you're saying is you need a range of penalties in between the guillotine and the slap and the wrist.
Yep.
And
that
this needs to be someplace appropriate in between.
John?
Do you have any idea how many school districts are not complying with the law?
We don't. One of the reasons this was introduced in the first place was because we couldn't guarantee the Interim Committee on Judiciary that all of the districts were in compliance. And we explained that the standardization process means that we touch base with one-fifth of the districts every year. At that point, most of them are in compliance. Occasionally we find a district, and if I were to say percentage-wise, probably 2%, which are not in compliance. 99% of the time, those districts come into compliance when we point out their error. Occasionally, a district really doesn't want to do some part of the law, and they don't.
Thank you. Why is it necessary to grant this authority to the superintendent? Why does he need this authority to do this? Can he not go to court for such an order?
I really don't know the answer to that. I do know that this is the way most of the state agencies enforce their rules. At least I've been informed that way.
Question. When you want to say obtain an order from the appropriate district court, is that intuitively obvious what the appropriate court is? Superintendent powers in Marion County, what happens if a little district now here is not in compliance? What's appropriate, now here, Marion, or both?
I didn't say to go, and it's not intuitively obvious to me. I'll find out.
Well, I think we could make it obvious by saying being seated in that community.
Yeah.
Further questions? Thank you. Anyone else here to testify on House Bill 2010? If not, we'll move on to House Bill 2011. Mr. Porter?
Chairman, members of the House Committee on Judiciary, I'm James D. Porter, the State Archivist of Oregon. I appear today in support of House Bill 2011, although it is now being delivered to you a proposed amendment to that bill that I'm submitting at the request of the Corrections Division. I had a telephone call from Mr. Chambers, the Corrections Division, who brought to my attention the fact that I had completely failed to consider that in the event of corrections in particular, people are released from the institution yet remain under supervision of a state agency. And they have asked that the bill be amended to ensure that they would still be able to protect the privacy of those individuals under their supervision during the period that they are still under supervision. It seems to me a perfectly reasonable objection to the bill and would cause no problem. The primary reason for me asking for the bill is that with the proliferation of restrictions on access to records that has occurred during the past few years, and the broad general language in Chapter 192, considerable burden has been placed on the custodian of records.
Second, Mr. Can I ask you a question about your proposed amendment? Section 2 of the bill says, notwithstanding ORS 192-500, public records that are more than 25 years old shall be available for inspection. However, the following public records shall remain confidential to the extent required or under other applicable law. Okay. There's records of persons still in the custody of the state institution. I guess my question is, the general law in this area says that records that are 25 years or younger are confidential. Is that correct?
Yes, Representative.
Therefore, if you have the only situation that could possibly be covered by your proposed amendment would be someone who had records that were 25 years old, who was then, I guess, placed on, or had been in an institution for that long, and then was placed under probation at some point in time after the 25-year period.
Representative Gardner, that appears to be the intent, that they have that potential of a person remaining in the state penitentiary for a period of 20 to 25 years, then being placed on parole. And it was this sort of problem that they were facing. It is possible for a person to be in the custody of a state institution from juvenile years and remain in such custody for a number of years, then being eventually released in halfway houses or on parole under more open custody. And this apparently was the situation they desired to be addressed. I have not cleared this language with the Corrections Division. I simply read the proposal over the telephone and received concurrence that this would solve their immediate problem. I'm hoping that it does.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
My hope is that we can, in open public discussion, establish some time period after which a custodian of a record would not have to demonstrate reasonableness or a lack of reason. At present, the only reason for denying access to personal information is that such access is unreasonable. And for myself, I have no difficulty in determining that it's reasonable or not, but I'm not always certain that the person I'm telling that they cannot see the record because that's considered unreasonable considers me such a reasonable individual. And it does pose an even greater problem for my assistant, my reference clerk, for county clerks, for custodians of records in public agencies throughout. And these older records do have considerable value for research of all types. Within the past 4 years, even the pursuit of genealogy has become a respectable research field. And of course, the older records are of great value to genealogists, to historians, to biographers. For my own part, I was quite thrilled, in fact, quite pleased to learn that Albert Einstein flunked mathematics in his younger years in school. It restored my confidence somewhat. So that in looking at the older records, I don't believe that we invaded the professor's privacy. At the same time, we did do me, a much younger man, quite a bit of that. In writing biographies of our presidents, if we must wait until they all die before we can really study some of their past, this could be quite some lengthy time, and that the present restrictions in Chapter 192, it's possible that no research could be conducted unless you could actually prove that the person was in fact dead, and that all attorneys and courts in the land would agree that the right to personal privacy expires with the individual.
Are there, in your mind, I guess this is just a philosophical question, are there any items of information that might find their way into the state archives that should never be disclosed?
I honestly cannot think of any, Representative Gardner, that the business of the state is public business. The very genesis of our government are the people themselves. Now, if government is going to reach decisions, make determinations on information that cannot be disclosed to the people, I would really rather that government didn't ask for that information in the first place. I do believe that a citizen is entitled to know why a decision was reached. And our best way to protect confidentiality is simply to avoid invading it in the first place. Now, once we have invaded that privacy and created the record, That record has been used in making determinations on behalf of the citizens of the state. I feel that access to those records should be as broad as possible and as quick as possible, so that every one of us can honestly evaluate the decisions that we administrators are making.
Questions for witness by
the
committee?
Well, just to follow up the philosophical question you asked, Mr. Chairman, I'm trying to determine how far item number sub 1 goes. Let's suppose that a person is committed to the state hospital and the records of the treating psychiatrist could show any number of things about that individual, which might in turn implicate other individuals who have not been in the custody of the hospital or under treatment, dealing with such matters as sexual preference or incest or some criminal transaction possibly involving another person still alive but who had not been subject of the treatment. Now, is the proposition that those records after the passage of time ought inevitably to be opened, or would you draw the line someplace along the line of the hypotheticals I just suggested?
Chairman, Representative Frohmeyer, I have very difficulty philosophically in answering that question. I would hate to be the judge. And in this case, the period of 75 years is fairly arbitrary. I do believe that at some time, sufficient time has elapsed. Now, the question of whether 75 years is adequate, or 99 years, or 205 years. I do believe that long-range studies of the effect of governmental administration, including the operation of the action of psychiatrists in mental institutions, should be subject to study and evaluation. I do believe that some of the longitudinal studies, even if we must use very ancient records, could be valuable to use in current decisions made today. Now, the more recent information you can use, of course, the more valid such studies will be. I would not oppose any establishment of time. It happens this period of 75 years was an rather arbitrary figure that I chose from deliberations of the Federal Congress on making available the 1900 census. And on decisions made by the Office of the United States, that in general, and thinking in terms of an insurance company, that 75 years after a record is created, which would normally come to the attention of the government, that person would either have expired or no longer really care if you did know. Learning the peccadilloes of my youth at age 65, might in fact, the fact that you knew when I reach age 75, might actually give me something to brag about rather than something to apologize for.
Further questions, Mr. Jones?
Mr. Porter, the bill is drafted, it would apply to all the public records that are mentioned in 192.500. That's divided into two main sections. In the first section, the public records are the kinds of public records that are exempt unless the public interest requires they're not being exempt, and the others are the ones that are absolutely exempt from disclosure. Do you intend this bill to apply to both of those categories?
Chairman Robinson, it is my hope that we simply can, after some period of time, open the door to the five-chamber records. There be no records restricted after some period of time, and that custodians of records not be put in the position of having to determine who a, quote, qualified researcher is. The real use of such records, incidentally, is by researchers, and to tell the truth, they really have to be pretty serious researchers, or they're not going to pose a problem of the difficulties of searching through some rather musty old records. They're not all nice, neat, and clean, nor are they filed in modern filing systems. So that we really do find quite serious research is using the older records. In fact, much of the progress made in modern psychiatric medicine up to the past two decades was made by analysis of the complete inmate files of the Pennsylvania Insane Asylums, as they were known in those days. It's only been in relatively recent years that the science of society has, psychiatric medicine, has evolved to the point where more objective data could be used by analyzing subjective case files. And it is my hope that we can all agree statewide on some period of time, after which it will not be necessary for any record custodian to make this decision, which I'm asking you as legislators to make for me today. Up until that time, I'll accept the responsibility of determining reasonableness and accepting the potential litigation that might develop therefrom.
Further questions from the witness? Thank you, sir.
Right.
Is there anyone else here to testify in House Bill 2011? State your name and address for the record.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Ron Huntley. I live in Salem, Oregon, 761 Dino Lane. I'm opposed to House Bill 2011 for the reason it places restrictions. From what I can see, I'm at a loss now. I don't have a copy of the amendment. Upon individuals who did have access to specific records in the search of genealogy tracings as far as hereditary family is concerned, for biological parents who are trying to locate their children, for children who might be trying to locate their parents and their relatives. It's restricting records from 25 up to 75 years. That 50-year period in there that wasn't there. I don't feel that it's fair. That 50 years could be the difference between the person that was searching for another member of their family, whether they're alive at the time they find them or whether they're dead at the time they find them.
I'm not sure, Mr. Huntley, but I think that this bill opens up from what the present restrictive law is, and presently the records that it doesn't restrict the access to the records. In fact, it opens up access to what the present law is.
It's my understanding is that following public records shall remain confidential to the extent of 192.500, and its number three is records less than 75 years old, which was sealed by the court order.
Yes, that's correct, that presently any record that's sealed by a court order cannot be opened by anyone after any period of time. So this would allow records that were 75 years and older to be opened and to be seen.
Presently, these records can be opened by petitioning the court and showing reasonable cause for access to those records.
Well, that is another section of law, and that would not be affected by this bill in any
way. It would not be affected.
No.
It appeared to me that it would limit the access, especially in the areas of the genealogy people that are trying to do research. If it broadens it, then please forgive me, but it appeared to me that it took 50 years out of there that wasn't there before.
No, I don't think that that's the case.
Opening automatically instead of needing a court order after 75 years.
After 75
years? Yeah, after 75 years, it would simply be a public record.
I kind of concur with the chairman's evaluation. I see it as an opportunity to open records rather than to further seal them.
Thank you, chairman.
You're welcome. Is there anyone else here to testify on House Bill 2011?
Yeah, the question is going again. Against me, but I'm having trouble understanding precisely what the phrase following however means between 1, 6, and 7. The following records shall remain confidential to the extent required by ORS 192.500. But 192.500 doesn't itself require anything to be confidential, does it?
ORS 192.500 subsection 1 starts out, the following public records are exempt from disclosure unless the public interest requires disclosure. Subsection 2 starts out, the following public records are exempt from disclosure. So exempt from disclosure is language used in 192.500.
Well, I'm hearing a little bit of trouble to see why they have a reference to 192.500. That can mean something to the effect that only confidential to the only extent required of those records designated as confidential by 192.500. Is that what they mean?
It looks to me that perhaps this is not as artfully drawn as it could be, because there is a...
You see the ambiguity that I'm asking about? What do you think it means?
Well, I didn't draft it, but I assume that it means that public records that come under 192.500 subsection 1 would remain confidential for 75 years and so on, unless the public interest requires disclosure. And the public records under 192.500 subsection 2 would simply remain exempt from disclosure until they were 75 years old in cases such as subsection 1 of the bill or so on.
Well, but no, 192.500 says two different things.
Huh.
One, the private balancing test is the types of records. And secondly, that's the prohibition against disclosure
mm-hmm.
with respect to others. We have cross references to 192.500. So we can't know in which of those two categories these three special exceptions apply.
Justin Fromeyer, as I read section 2 of the bill, it says, notwithstanding ORS 192.500, public records, period, that are more than 25 years old should be available for inspection. So I would assume it applies to both categories under 192.500. All public
okay.
records
okay.
are
okay.
open.
I read you so far.
Okay. Then it says the following records will remain confidential to the extent required by ORS 92.500 or other applicable law. And then it talks about three different kinds of records.
Okay, but my concern is the extent required by ORS 192.500. 192.500 has two different extents
okay,
in which the record would be confidential. Either that which applies the balancing test to the public interest or the absolute prohibition against disclosure. And a simple cross reference to 500 won't do it because you want to know which piece of 500 they're talking about.
Right. Mr. Poirier, would you like to come back up for a minute? You've been listening, I suppose, to our colloquy here. can you tell us what you intended by this language?
This is described by members of the committee. There was great difficulty encountered in drafting this legislation, and the committee council at that time and I were both extremely thrilled that the legislative council assumed the responsibility for us. The problem really developed from the fact that many public officials at both state and county level read the provisions of 192.500 sub 2, sub C, and sub B, pardon me, sub B and sub C to really preclude access to them. If you notice that the language in 192.500 2A 2B, the last sentence of that, the party seeking disclosure shall have the burden of showing that public disclosure would not constitute an unreasonable invasion of privacy. And it was that burden that we had hoped to relieve.
Okay, so your intent is to understand this, that A, all public records that are more than 25 years old are available for inspection, period, unless 1, 2, and 3, and in that case, you're willing to live and die upon what 1, 2, and 3 say, regardless of what ORS 192.500 says.
Precisely.
You're not going to a balancing test, you're not going to some kind of limited access. You're saying that the record is less than 75 years old, contains information about the physical or mental health or psychiatric care treatment of an individual, that that's going to remain confidential.
the intent of this bill is simply to remove the discretionary authority, the judgmental decisions that must be made by a record custodian. You're still going to have to face the burden of the judgment for the first 25 years for everything, and for the first 75 years for these that we have specified. But after that, even if the custodian doesn't believe that you're a qualified researcher or that your use of these records is reasonable, I'm hoping to be able to take the custodian, take me out of the position of determining whether your request for it is reasonable or not. It even offends me. I will not permit my staff to ask why a person wants to see the records. It's none of our business why you want to see them. If they are confidential by statute, we will not permit you to see them. If they are not confidential, we will.
Okay. I thought I had to fully scrape my mind, and what you just said confused me a little bit more. You're saying that under sections 1, 2, and 3 of section 2 of the bill, that there are some occasions in which there would be a record, say, less than 75 years old, which contained information about the physical or mental health or psychiatric care, treatment of a living individual, in which you would, under a reasonable test, allow someone access to, or are you saying that in all cases involving that situation, it's going to be confidential? Which is it?
Again, Representative Gardner, you have definitely asked the question very much to the point. I do not see House Bill 2011 restricting the currently approved research in these records by the qualified researcher, the one who has a need as a public agency. However, the mechanism of getting to these younger records is more difficult than I hopefully can have for the older records. The records that contain this personal information that are more than 25 years old and less than 75 years old can definitely be used with the permission, under the authority of a judge of the court, or under the authority of the administrator of the agency which created those records in the first place. But what I'm hoping to do is to avoid the necessity of the researcher running back and forth once we get past 75 years, during the first 25 years, for many of them, keeping from getting a runaround by being told you'll have to go get the permission of the state penitentiary or corrections division or whatever for some of the information. And for others, particularly the people that are still in there and still alive, then at least we won't run around on getting access to those after the 75 years. We do have both of these problems, that there is current access permitted, but it takes the responsibility, it helps ease the burden of making that decision by setting a time limit.
I think that what we need to do basically is to spell out the present extent to which items under 1, 2, and 3 of subsection 2 can be reached, and put that into the bill to resolve the ambiguity, because I think just referring to 192.500 will not do that in the way that the chair will need to make a note of that for the work session to resolve that ambiguity. So the further questions for witness. Thank you. Is there anyone else to testify on House Bill 2011? Okay. We'll go then to House Bill 2137. I don't believe I have a finance sheet for 2137.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Robert Steele, I'm with the Bureau of Labor. This is a pre-session filed bill by the previous administration of the Labor Commission. I believe in their filing this bill, what they were doing was moving the section from ORS 192.305 to 192.170 to test the maintenance of public records to section 192.305 410 to 1500, which speaks to the inspection of public records as addressed the change of the Labor Commission. So it's actually treated as mandatory, just a housekeeping matter.
Okay. Questions to the witness? It's been so much.
Well, what's the public policy reason for having these records confidential? Why should we say that an investigation is involved questioning whether or not someone's in compliance with the wage and hour law? Why should that be confidential?
The only confidentiality that I'm aware of that just pertains to the areas under ORS 192-500, those are the only areas that would be confidential. All other records would be open.
As I read the bill that you had before us, concerning the commission is going to require the production of certain records by an employer, and then the commissioner may make records of his or her own about whether or not that employer is in compliance with the law. And as I read section 3 of this bill, it says, notwithstanding chapter 192 provision, 192 says generally everything is public record, these records made or obtained shall be confidential. And I guess what I'm asking is, why does the commissioner want, or why should we as a legislature accept the judgment of the commissioner that these records shouldn't? To be private rather than public.
Okay, I cannot really answer that part of your question. What I can do is get this information back, your question on that, get answer to your question back to you. Like I said, this was a pre-session file bill, and I have to talk with the staff and the case number that will be on me.
Okay, well, I would appreciate it if you would, and you would have the commissioner inform the committee, because I can see some things, and there might be trade secrets, perhaps there might be some sort of personal confidentiality involved, but how, for example, would the legislature or any member of the public, the journalist, or whatever, monitor how effective a job the commissioner is doing, unless they have some way of measuring what the commissioner has done or reported?
I have
the question to correct the technical cross-reference, and what this part from my mind is a more fundamental question about whether this should be in confidentiality at all. I'd like to check that out just for you.
Further questions for witness by the committee? Thank you. Is there anyone else here to testify on House Bill 2137? If not, that is complete for our agenda on the public hearing section of today's session. I'll declare the public hearing closed. We'll now move into work session, and the first bill that we'll take up is House Bill 2006. What's the committee's pleasure?
I want to just 3 seconds.
I'm just going to declare a 5-minute recess. We'll stand a recess for 5 minutes. The meeting will come to order. The clerk will now serve members present. Representatives Jesus and Nathan are excused. We're in work session on House Bill 2006. Representative Fulmer.
Chairman, I suggested to the chair that I could perhaps explain some of the background of the need for the bill. Even though I know official representative of the Department of Higher Education is here. This bill was originally passed in 1971 to deal with the problem of security of student records in light of FBI searches of files against universities. And this passed the last day of the 7-1 session. Subsequently amended several times, number one, to put in information regarding the evaluation of faculty members, It could not have been in the original bill. And then secondly, to elaborate somewhat on student records. In about 1973 or 74, Congress in the United States passed something that's called Buckley Amendment, which is a rider to another bill. And that means imposed very stringent restrictions on the ability of any institution of education, higher or intermediate or lower, to reveal records of students. And so although the Oregon procedure to a very large degree had already anticipated what the Buckley Amendment would do, and institutions required to obey the Buckley Amendment or lose the federal funds, there was one respect at least in which the Oregon law is inconsistent with federal law. And the State Board of Higher Education, through its legal counsel, has been advised that unless steps are taken to change the state law, that the entire state system runs the risk of losing the federal funds. And that one change appears primarily on page 2 in line 15, where the language of the Act says that access to records, personal records, cannot be limited for records of academic achievement. Now, you can construe academic achievement in a lot of different ways. You can say simply it's the degree earned or conferred, or the credits earned, or you could be talking about actual numerical or letter grades. Federal government's primary interpretation has been that records of academic achievement would include grades. Those are regarded as personal information under the federal law and cannot be released, period, without the student or the student's parents' consent. Under present Oregon law, however, those records could be released after 25 years. That then constitutes the main inconsistency which this statute is designed to address. And I take it that the person who drafted the statute, which I believe was Assistant Attorney General Ed Branchfield, the Chief Counsel of the State System, attempted to separate out all those portions of the law that deal with rules about faculty records from all those portions of the law which deal with student records, so that if subsequent changes of this kind in the future occur, that the board can act under two statutory sections to make separate rules and regulations regarding faculty and students. I think that's the background why this bill is before us.
Is there a motion on the bill?
I would personally like to see representatives of the state system in the lobbyists who represent faculty interests and perhaps the students invited to comment on this question, because I know that it will be the subject of considerable debate in items that we now have not addressed ourselves to at all. There are certain technical deficiencies, for example, in the matters dealing with faculty evaluation that have caused a number of problems on local campuses. We could take the opportunity now to address those, or we could simply pass the bill out and suggest to people on the Senate side that if they're interested in further amendments there, they could do it. That's why I'm just giving not making a motion, and I couldn't. The purposes of that I described in the bill we need to achieve if we're going to put the system out of jeopardy.
I too have mixed motions. I think perhaps if we took the approach that you had outlined, we might be inviting trouble in the sense that the purposes of this bill were drafted might not be accomplished. And I'm sure that there are probably other vehicles that are in that will be coming into the system to deal with the issue that you're dealing with or concerned with as far as access to faculty evaluation. The chair would then move that House Bill 2006 be sent to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. For discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Frommer?
Aye.
Representative Cohen?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative
Garden? Aye. Passes. We now move to House Bill 2010. The motion on House Bill 2010.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move to send this to the court committee with a detailed recommendation.
Representative Smith moved that House Bill 2010 be sent to the full committee with a detailed recommendation for discussion. Chairman.
This is the one that Representative Summer has concluded about line 8, the appropriate court, making it clear whether it means Marion County Circuit Court or the court in the county in which the school district is located.
The question is someone who's been in the form of education in our union. Are there any school districts across the county line?
Sure. Yes.
So we've got two in more than one county potentially. Chairman, I would move successfully to amend line 8. With the focus of contest amendment on the DPAS recommendation for full committee. That the appropriate circuit court be changed to circuit court in any county in which the district may be found.
Okay. Since we're just moving this to the full committee for final committee action, we'll be in work session. I will accept that motion. Representative Frohmeyer has moved to amend Representative Smith's motion conceptually, and then in line with the bill, appropriate circuit court to be changed to the circuit court in which the district, any circuit court in which the district resides. For discussion on the amendment, is there objection to the amendment? If none, it's adopted. Is there further discussion on the motion as amended? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Cohen?
An order mandating compliance. I take it that that is another way of saying you're a mandamus. Do you need to spell out any penalty provision, or would that be an inherent part of the power of the court to impose a penalty?
In the order of the court, it's been so admired that it's not obeyed, it's subject to contempt power. So if the court did grant a writ of mandamus or an order arising from such a writ to a school district or appropriate officer there, and that person failed to obey the order, I would think that the circuit judge would exercise that power judiciously. I don't see.
So we're talking about a remedy that would run personally against an officer of school rather than one that would run against the board?
Right, because the order, the writ would be directed to some officer or agent of the school district, and one say to the school district, would say to John Doe.
Or the board.
Or the board of the school district.
Okay. Is that a good piece?
Okay. I think it is, but my opinion. Okay, we'll move on to House Bill 2011. This bill, I think, is going to need some. It's going to need some redrafting before it's ready to be passed out of the committee.
I would ask that the committee council provide us with some of the corrections that we've asked for through our questions to the witnesses and bring it back to this subcommittee before there's any further action taken on it.
That's a wise suggestion, Councilman Smith. Is there any objection to that suggestion?
No.
If not, that shall be done.
I don't exactly have an objection. I have a question.
Okay.
It's not entirely clear to me what corrections you're talking about. I think we're left with an issue about subsections 1 and 2 of 192.500 and whether physical and mental health or psychiatric records of persons still in custody, records less than 75 years old, should be put into the existing structure of 192.500 for the purposes of disclosure now, current disclosure, of, current records. So unless I just missed totally.
I think, I questioned the witness quite closely on this, and I think his intent is that
under those three provisions that are in subsections 1, 2, and 3 of section 2 of the bill, that they would fall under the same restrictions that are presently in ORS 192-500 as they relate to those three items. And if you could so draft the bill to reflect that, I think we would probably be able to move it on.
Is that the committee's understanding?
Let me see if I interpret this correctly. We've all tried it. The company is saying, except in the cases of sub items 1, 2, and 3, then notwithstanding the provisions of ORS 192-500, public records that are more than 25 years old shall be available for inspection. There's three exceptions, as I read it.
That's correct, but the degree of confidentiality for those three items, the witness, I believe, wants those to be governed by present law under ORS 192-500.
Okay.
Everything else is going to be wide open after 25 years. It's just blanket, it's open. Okay, presently it's not, but in the case of these three items, he wants the law of ORS 192-500 as it relates to three items now to control.
And I'm merely suggesting, I think we're on the same wavelength, that this could be worded as an exception, except for, and then enumerate those three sub-items, then public records that are more than 25 years old shall be available for public inspection, notwithstanding ORS 192-500. It's just reversing the structure of the language and accomplishing the same thing, I think.
Well, that may be, I'd like to have counsel take a look at this.
I agree. But
he can bring that back.
Counsel is asking for some interpretation of what she would bring back, and I'm offering my interpretation of what that says, and think it's a simpler method of saying it.
So okay, well, let's send some
of another concern that I have is in item 2, we talked about persons in custody under lawful supervision of a state agency. Two concerns there. Number one, state agency. Are we using that term in a technical sense, which it is defined in chapter 183, or does it have some other meaning? And if it is unclear, maybe we ought to have definition of what constitutes a state agency. Secondly, is there any reason to leave the term to state agencies as opposed to agencies of some local government? Maybe, Mr. Porter, you could address that briefly if I could ask you.
Yeah, Mr. Porter, would you come up and aid us in our work?
And if you're under probation with with the local circuit court, or in the county jail for a year, or in county institution of some kind, that'll help.
Mr. Seven, Representative Frommeyer, we frankly did not discuss that. It occurred to me after my conversation with Mr. Chambers that a question could arise where the person, individual, is under the custody of the county court. And in this choice between the word institution and agency, frankly, in my own mind, the word institution satisfied me to begin with, because I have the same problem you have. The definition for institution and agency in various places of the statutes have been reversed. I think perhaps in the custody of a public body might be a more clear-cut definition if we could all agree that a state agency is in fact a public body. It's just back to the legal counsel that in this particular case, the choice of words is critical. That's the whole problem on all these privacy statutes, that the choice of words is critical. We're getting the kind of discussion I had hoped for, with really experienced people in the law discussing it openly, so that we don't have these arbitrary decisions made by some person. Just what should be looked at. And in this case, I think there's a good point that there is danger that county probation office. Now, there are other bills before this current session that would, in essence, bring all those functions under the state and the degree of their success
we can't anticipate, it would obviously be wise to take a close look and see if we could use the word public bodies in lieu of the word agency.
Well, do you think we took that fourth June and sent out the definitions of agencies, vis-a-vis institutions, and also perhaps bring to the committee some appropriate language that would allow us to extend this beyond state agency institutions and perhaps taking local or municipal agencies?
Mr. Chairman, may I intervene again? I hesitate to do this, but I have, as I've listened and as I've finally got the Judiciary Committee's report and read it, realized that there is a potential conflict between this bill and the House Bill 2010, which the committee just voted to recommend out to be passed. Not 2010, pardon me. House Bill 2086. There is a potential conflict because we have not, in this bill, exempted the student record from these automatic disclosure after 25 years. And part of the problem is, on page 57 of the interim committee report, the contents of the directory information were pretty well spelled out what all was going to be in there. That was, they were discussing at that time House Bill 2010, and on page 57 they went into some detail as to what would be considered a student directory information. Student's name, address, telephone, date and place of birth, major field of study, participation in officially recognized activities and sports, weight and measurement, weight and height, members of athletic teams, dates of attendance, degrees and awards received. It's all nicely spelled out in that section, and it is possible that similar spelling out in the bill pertaining to the records of higher education could resolve this conflict between the federal statutes and the Oregon statutes. Degrees seem to be what's at issue, not did you graduate or not.
Chairman, just for the education of the committee, and Mr. Porter, don't take offense to this, but I'm afraid that we're getting ourselves into deeper trouble there. Give an example. In Ohio State University, 14% of the graduating class a couple of years ago was not listed in the commencement program because they invoked the Buckley Amendment and said, I don't want the public to know I've been in a tax-supported institution for 4 years. There's some argument that you can't, that's a pretty good argument, that you can't list the people who've been elected to Phi Beta Kappa in academic honorary, unless you've received their specific consent, or even if they've won an outstanding scholarship or prize awarded by the faculty. So I would hesitate to use the language you just suggested any more specifically.
And in addition, we should perhaps consider amending this 2011 to include
the. I think that's going to be our conflict and then a problem. Thanks.
Do you want to consider a conflict for 2011 also soon?
Well, yeah, I'll still do it. I don't know that it's necessary if 2011 continues to refer specifically to 192.500 because student records are not in 192.500.
That's true.
May I address the chairman's attention to the language or other statutes in that bill,
but it says the following, it still doesn't refer to student records.
This is public records.
To the extent required by ORS 192.500 or other applicable law.
I think there's a need for a conflict amendment because for notwithstanding ORS 192.500 doesn't sufficiently characterize public records. You're only talking about those records under that section. Just as public records, notwithstanding that subsection, are open to the public after 25 years. So I think the potential problem that he has outlined exists under the present language of the bill.
Thank you.
Well, yeah, you know, I found another one.
Okay.
In 192, 500, sub 2, 8, is the list of exemptions for specific statutes that can't be disclosed. And note there that it lists 351.065, but it doesn't list 351.070, which we have just amended to add the student records provision. So we'll have to amend 192.28 in order to make it clear that the bill we just passed out in 2006 also exempts student records from public records.
Anything else that we can find wrong with it?
It was such a simple bill.
Yeah, I'm just about ready to say more. Okay. Any other questions? Okay. And I forget where we're at as far as we have. We passed upon it to the full committee with the conceptual amendments that have been outlined.
No, I don't believe we had a motion.
Did you make a motion?
No. I hope we don't have a motion. I want to look at it.
Okay, what's called it in the subcommittee?
If I recall, I go to the committee council reviewed it and hold it at this subcommittee level for further review.
Refresh my memory. Okay, we'll move on to House Bill 2137. I'd also not mind if any of the committee members wanted to take another look at House Bill 2011.
I represent a
firm
about this.
Okay. Do a motion on House Bill 2137.
Let's see. Let's see for a moment. I don't have a motion, but I really do question the public policy on this bill. I don't know why there ought to be a blanket exemption for any record obtained by the Labor Commission.
Well, that's the present law. I don't know what the public policy consideration for it is.
And beyond that, Mr. Chairman, to say any record obtained or made by the commissioner under this section, so the commissioner makes a record as to the non-compliance of an employer. And why the hell shouldn't that be public?
Okay.
Let's move on. It seems to me also that the Department of Labor's material is usable, it's discoverable in a civil action very frequently. They supply their records in a civil action for non-compliance with the power provision. And the most frequently, you exhaust administrative remedies just to obtain the supposed expert investigation of that department so that you can use it in a civil matter.
My motion is that the Twin Council be requested to write a letter on the subcommittee's behalf to Commissioner Roberts requesting a formal response. Number one, the question is to the public policy which justifies this exception to public records law. And secondly, to the desire, assuming that there is such a public policy that's desirable, to the justification for the breadth of the exemption that's found in the language any record obtained or made by the commissioner under this section. And the purpose for that, if I may debate the motion, is to find out how much it's actually justifiable, and secondly, to see if the committee accepts the notion that it's justifiable, then we'll have to tear down the exemption so that it doesn't just give a blanket okay with anything the commissioner does in making a original investigation.
Yeah, there's an easier way that we could get their attention.
Okay, what?
No, that probably would get the attention, but we could just delete the nod in line 16 and move the full committee with a due pass recommendation. That might, and still notify them,
yeah.
That might bring
them. I prefer to use diplomacy at this stage.
Okay. Is there any objection to that suggestion? If not, we'll do that. Hold this bill over as well. Is there any other items of business to come before the subcommittee?
okay, if not, stand adjourned.